I'm all about the hustle, I'm all about the grind. Every day I'm trying to get it, take it one step at a time, and we get it off the muscle.
Welcome to Carl Brizzy Live. This is the second in a series of podcasts that we began last week, and regrettably, and this one is actually delayed because of the mass shooting that took at least 17 lives so far now in southern Florida. And part of the reason that the taping of this podcast is delayed is because I was literally trying to process in my head what I was hearing from people who were speaking to the media post-shooting, law enforcement officials, but actually more importantly from school officials and the school superintendent, who was obviously traumatized from what happened. And before I go any further, obviously thoughts, I mean, this sounds so trite anymore, but obviously thoughts and prayers. I can't imagine what the families and the parents and the educators are going through and the students are going through. We've never, thankfully, thank God, have had to go through that in Indiana. But what was troubling to me is this sort of finger pointing, and you know, these sort of harsh rebukes to the government for more gun control and more, you know, social media monitoring to police the thought, right, of students. And here's the thing, and this might take me a second or two, Rob. Rob Kendall, my producer. Rob Kendall Show, 1 to 3 on Sundays is here with me. Thank you, Rob.
Hey, pleasure to be with you, Carl. Like you said, this is a very tough topic, and I know you've given it a lot of thought, and so I'm really interested to hear your take on this.
Right. So here's why I'm so troubled. This child, like Columbine and like other shootings like this, you know, they were expelled from school because they were doing things that were antisocial. And so the response to this antisocial behavior is to marginalize them even further so that the school doesn't have to deal with them. And, you know, one of the things that the superintendent of the schools in Florida was saying today was that we need, you know, more mental health services. We need more money for mental health services. Well, okay, fine. But why don't we start with the schools? I am currently doing special education litigation for children who school systems have targeted because they basically become a pain in the ass and the schools don't want to deal with them anymore. And I know now, because I've had four children go through North Central, that North Central is a different school now than it was back in the 80s when I went to school. And these zero tolerance policies and this quick, you know, kick to expel kids who have demonstrated some obvious antisocial behavior is what is contributing to these shootings, right? I mean, what do you do? You take a person who is mentally unstable, who is potentially very antisocial, who is exhibiting antisocial behaviors, who's not fitting in, who may be being picked on, who may actually be a bully, whatever it is, and then you just kick them out of the only environment that they know. And you marginalize them so that they sit in their basement, in their mother's basement, and brood over how disconnected they are to society. And then what do? Then they start to go to those really dark places in our minds. And we've all been there. We've all had moments where we've been in those dark places. And dark places look like suburbs of hell. And they think about their existence. And then they begin to hate their own existence. And then they begin to hate other people's existence. If you read the memoirs from the young men who committed those brutal murders at Columbine, it is exactly this. They hate existence and they want to take their revenge out on other people and on the creator. And that's what they were doing, right? They were trying to erase human beings, as many as they can. And then you get, Rob Kendall, then you get the media, right, to make these people into, you know, evil celebrities. And it's a race, right, to see who can be more famous for how many people they've killed. And so you have educators who are calling for gun control and more mental health, and then you have the media who are calling for this, you know, the left-wing media, the progressive media, calling for the same things. And both of those entities are honestly contributing to the problem, right? I mean, if there was an agreement among news people that, hey, we're not ever going to say the name, well, not even ever, but we'll say the name of the guy one time, and then we're not going to talk about this guy anymore. Let's focus on the victims of the tragedy so we don't make the killers, you know, pop star celebrities in a way.
Carl, let me ask you this, because I was a freshman in high school when Columbine happened. And I remember at the time, that was when the goth movement, the dark movement was big, and everybody chalked it up to like, okay, this is tragic, it's horrific, but it's this group of kids and everybody, the trench coats and the, you know, the all black attire, and you just said it's this sort of kid you got to worry about. That hasn't proven true over time, because there doesn't seem to be a genre that these teen school shooters seem to fall into. It seems like they come from all different sorts of walks of life.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just like the shooter in Las Vegas, you know, I mean, people were trying to, you know, figure out what his motivation was. He was apparently a wealthy guy. He was, you know, not ostracized from society. But no, there's no cookie cutter pattern, you know, for these people, because they're human beings, right? And these are human beings who have seriously, like, lost their way and are literally want to, you know, curse God for their own existence. There's no other explanation. Well, there might be a physical explanation, a tumor or something that makes them act the way that they do. But there's no other, you know, mental explanation for wanting to kill as many people as you possibly can. You're listening to Carl Brizzi Live, my second podcast, regrettably on the heels of this mass shooting in Florida. And when I come back, I just want to talk about, like, the rerun pattern that we are on right now, right? Something like this happens, and you can literally predict what the responses are going to be from all of the different sides of the aisle. And it is as if nobody wants to get anything done. Carl Brizzi Live.
Ace was so fucking worried about his casino, he forgot what we were doing out here in the first place. A million times I wanted to yell in his fucking ear, "This is Las Vegas. We're supposed to be out here robbing, you dumb fucking heeb."
All right, welcome back to Carl Brizzi Live, our second podcast. Rob Kendall, our producer, Rob Kendall Show on WIBC 1-3 on Sundays. Rob, thanks for being here with us. Another mass shooting, and like I was saying in the first segment, another absolute explosion of demagoguery, right? And you know, I'm reading various rants from usually smart Facebook friends. And there's no difference. It's just a rerun in the reactions. It's a rerun in the rhetoric, right? Like, just like a TV show. And look, everyone wants to do something. I get that. But hurling insults at the NRA and calling for gun control restrictions because doing something is better than doing nothing. Think of the children, kind of hysterical responses. That is not constructive. That is not constructive. You're not going to take guns away from Americans. That's not going to happen. What we can do, though, is focus on these young people who are exhibiting antisocial behavior, and maybe not expelling them from school and further marginalizing them, but getting them the help that they need. These children, if you go back to Columbine and some of these other shootings, they have all demonstrated and exhibited antisocial behavior, poems, stories about killing people. It's apparent. And I don't know how long progressives are going to be able to just point the finger at the weapons that are used to create the destruction, right? Because that's not the problem. The problem is the emotional and spiritual state of the people who are actually pulling the trigger of these weapons. And I'm not sure that anybody wants things to get better, because I just feel like after one of these shootings occurs, everyone just takes their typical sides and they just want to score political points with their constituencies. These children have troubled pasts. They've acted in a crazy way in the past, maybe won too many fights, whatever. But the solution ought not be to further marginalize them and throw them out of school and exacerbate the problem, where they go into their parents' basement and they start brooding about the hell of their own existence. You know, people are talking about monitoring, you know, psychotropic drug prescriptions, you know, the kind that curb ordinary anxiety and depression, background checks for weapons. All of these things are factors in some way, Rob, but who's going to monitor this? And how's it going to be monitored, right? The sheriff in Florida was talking about having more authority to go after people who say crazy things on social media. Well, that sounds really scary. That sounds very Orwellian. And that kind of doctrine, that kind of procedure is just begging to be abused, no matter who's in power.
How much of this is egged on by the fact that we're all connected now via social media, like 24/7, you can engage with anyone in the world in at any given time. And you started out your show today by talking about Columbine. You know, you mentioned Columbine. Yes, there was the internet then, but everybody wasn't connected at any given second. You know, the only thing you had is a messenger or a forum board. How much now is the fact that this stuff can feed off each, people can feed off each other because of the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Instagrams, that at any given moment we're all connected?
Yeah. Well, look, I can be super critical of social media for that aspect, but we use social media to get our message out. No, there's a huge disconnect, I think, now, and I think it goes to empathy, and it goes to the denigration of civil discourse in our society, where we don't see people as people anymore, right? You're able to insult someone on Facebook or Twitter. You're able to join, you know, some crowd that is anti this or pro that, and you've taken the human element out of it, and you're literally, you know, hurling insults at an emoticon, right? I mean, it's hard to.
I mean, it sounds terrible to say, but you're right.
Yeah, and it's really hard. My daughter is dating someone that has been dating for a long time, and I love this kid. She's in California in school, and he for a long time didn't like me because I was responsible for putting his some of his relatives in prison.
And oh, that's awkward.
Yeah,
right?
So it was awkward for a long time. And look, we had different like historical perspectives on life, right? His lens was different from mine, and so it took a long time. But here's what it took, Rob. It took us spending time together and talking to each other and respecting each other's views to where we came to some consensus. Like, yeah, we can disagree on this because we agree that we see things through different lenses, but we respect each other. And now, you know, he's like a son to me. But now that took, you know, that took some years, but it also took time, and it took empathy on both of our sides to realize that, hey, we're both human beings. We've had different life experiences and we see things through different lenses, and we both contribute to the dialogue and come up with some sort of, you know, consensus. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And Carl, what's interesting to me, actually, I'll ask you this in the next segment, because we got about a minute left here in this one before we got to get to a break. So I'll save that for the next segment.
Okay. Well, when we come back, I'm going to talk more about the canned responses to the shooting and what, if anything, we can do to prevent this kind of violence in the future. Carl Brizzi Live, our second podcast.
What's this?
What's that?
Where'd you get this? Your mother found this behind your drawer.
It's money that I've been saving, Dad.
$600 you've been saving? What'd you become, a brain surgeon overnight, son?
Tell your father where you got the money.
Dad, I worked for it.
Hey, welcome back to Carl Brizzy Live. I'm Carl Brizzy with Rob Kendall, my awesome producer. Rob Kendall Show, 1 to 3 on Sundays. Rob, thanks for being here. Talking about the shooting that just occurred today. It's the reason why my podcast was delayed and it's taping, because I'm trying to get my head around what people are saying and how they're responding. And it seems to me like rerun television, right? I mean, a massacre happens and then people jump up with this knee-jerk response about how the NRA is somehow responsible for this. I mean, tell me exactly anyone who is making an argument, who is trying to articulate an argument to blame the NRA. What regulations, Rob Kendall, that are not already in existence would have stopped this Florida shooting?
Well, it's one of those things, Carl, and you make a great point. I'm sure you saw this as a prosecutor because you deal with evil, right? I mean,
right.
You deal with people that want to do bad things.
Right, who want to hurt other people.
And you probably dealt with a lot of people who were good people who just made mistakes.
That too.
But of the people that are pure evil, and my dad used to tell me this all the time because he was a federal law enforcement officer, you can't stop somebody that wants to harm someone else and is going to harm someone
else. No, the only way to stop them is with a weapon.
Yes. You're absolutely right. So how are you going to stop some guy that's dead set on murdering 17 people?
Yeah, you have to shoot them. I mean, no, like, seriously, if you can't stop it, right? If you can't figure out within, let's say, the educational system that people are exhibiting antisocial behavior, right? Because these people, look, I am sure that some, maybe not all, but some of these folks, if the proper intervention would have been done, they could get better. Right? Maybe they wouldn't curse their existence. Maybe they wouldn't have an existential crisis that causes them to want to eliminate as many human beings as they possibly can because they hate the earth and creation so much, right? I mean, you get into the head of these mass murderers, and that's what you find when you read their manifestos and you read the things that they've written.
I'm really curious how you deal with someone, though, because a lot of people are unhappy, right? You're
right.
Unhappy in your marriage,
look,
or you're unhappy.
Everyone is unhappy,
yeah.
Because we're all going to die.
Yeah. So you're unhappy. But how do you go from I'm unhappy to I'm so unhappy that I'm going to kill people?
Yeah.
Like, did you ever, as a prosecutor, did you ever deal with that and try to figure out that question?
No, but I think it's an important question. And I think it's important to do enough reading and to understand history enough to know that, you know, human beings, and even your own human being, right, your own, like, you have to really explore the depths of your own soul and explore, you know, what human beings are capable of doing. Nobody wants to imagine themselves being a Nazi guard in a Holocaust camp, right? We all want to think that we're going to be the ones who are going to save the Jews, you know, that we're going to put our own children at risk to hide the Jews in our basement. Well, guess what? That's not what history says. There's only a very, very small minority of people who are willing to do that. So for us modern people in 2018 to think that we're going to be the ones who are going to stand up in those circumstances and put our own lives and our children's lives on the line, like, that's muddle-headed thinking. You really need to think about what you're capable of doing and you know, in those extreme circumstances. But
can I ask you just a quick point, because I know I want to get to this before we wrap up here today. Nice thing about podcasts, if we go a little long, it's on us, right? It's our podcast.
It's my podcast.
We can do what you want. This is obviously the worst thing that this prosecutor will ever have to deal with, right?
Right.
I mean, there's nothing. Do you remember what the worst thing you ever had to deal with as a prosecutor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Would you mind sharing?
No, it was the Hamilton Avenue killings. You know, the Covarrubias family was massacred in, the bad guys, and I'm not going to mention their names because I don't believe in mentioning bad guys' names, right? So they thought that the Covarrubias was this Mexican family that had a lot of people living in the same house, and they were all hardworking people, and they thought that they were drug dealers. Well, they weren't drug dealers, and so when they went into the house to find the drug money, things went bad, and several people were killed, including babies who were shot and killed. And it was really bad because it affected the whole city. And, you know, going to the funerals and seeing the little coffins, and then ultimately I prosecuted the case along with some other prosecutors that worked for me. And they're in prison forever. But, you know, nothing that could, you know, there's nothing that we can do after the fact, right, to bring those bodies back, to bring those lives back.
I assume you had to prove that case, right? You didn't know, I mean, you knew who did it, but you had, it wasn't like out in the open like this, right?
What do you mean?
Like, we know this guy did it. I mean, without a doubt. There's there's no doubt.
Yeah, you know, there were some evidentiary issues that we had to follow through on.
So on a case like this, where you know who did it, you're the prosecutor, put yourself back in that, you're in this prosecutor's shoes, where do you go? What do you do right now? What are your steps?
Well, the first thing you do is you make sure that it's the right guy, obviously, and I think that it's pretty clear from everything that they have the right guy, but you don't want to make those assumptions. So you decide that, you know, figure out that if it's the right guy, and then Florida's a death penalty state, so you file the death penalty, and you know whether or not you go through with that is a whole nother story, because I filed the death penalty as prosecutor in several cases during my 8 years, but ultimately, in consultation with the families of the victims, I always allowed the defendant to opt for life without the possibility of parole. In exchange for, you know, going through with the death penalty prosecution, which is
you allowed the family to make that choice?
Well, no, not to make the choice. I allowed the family to participate in the decision. And, you know, typically that happens like 2 or 3 years probably 2 years after the charges are filed, right? So they've had time to process this. They've had time to grieve. They've had time to sort of deal with the reality of what we're talking about in terms of a death penalty prosecution. And I've never had a situation where the family disagreed with the decision to let the defendants plead to life without parole. Because life without parole in Indiana, under the statute that we allow these defendants to plead guilty to, that means they literally don't ever get out of prison. And there's no appeal process. There's no parole process. The family doesn't have to be called into hearings, you know, before the Department of Corrections. And so it really does provide, you know, some closure for them. And it ensures that the bad guy, you know, never gets out of prison. Like, they need to spend the rest of their lives atoning, you know, for what they did, and making sure that their souls are what's the right word?
Clean.
Clean. Yeah. So you've got the next 30, 40 years to focus on the eternal, and then the families, you know, get to spend that time not getting caught up in the criminal justice process and then being victimized again. They can move on with their lives. Wow, we went to a totally different place right there. But thank you for asking that question, because I think, you know, when we look at all of this, that's an important piece of it, right? Because everyone's going to be calling for you know, the harshest sanction, without even really knowing like how this kid is messed up, right? Because clearly he's messed up. That doesn't mean he doesn't have to pay the price for what he did.
How am I funny?
I'm not just, you know how you tell a story. What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
1, 2, 3 into the folk. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope.
Appreciate you guys all joining me on my second podcast. My gosh, I love this. Rob Kendall, thank you for doing such a great job. And we'll talk soon. Carl Brizzi Live.
I'm all about the hustle. I'm all about the grind. Every day I'm trying to get